This is Studio 360.
I'm Kurt Anderson.
It takes years for Richard Ford to write a novel. His newest, The Lay of the Land, has been germinating for a decade. He told us a couple of years ago that he spent so much time gathering material and reworking his manuscript that he kept his pages as they were finished in his fridge for safekeeping. If the house burned down, he figured the freezer would be the safest place. Well, he eventually took those pages out of the freezer, and now Richard Ford is here with me today to talk about his new novel, The Lay of the Land. Richard, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you, Kurt. Glad to be here. Thanks a lot. I should tell you, you know, I did keep my manuscript in the freezer, and the last week I was working on it, which is about the middle of August, I left my workroom where I worked, and I left my manuscript under a halogen lamp, and it fell down on my manuscript and set it on fire. So
you made your greatest fear come true.
I did, without really wanting to.
And was any irreparable destruction done?
When I got back in the room, it was all full of smoke and the manuscript was flickering, but all the editor marks, most of which I had made, were intact and we could put it back together.
There's something fictional and metaphorical about that very event.
It just means I didn't really want to do it, right?
I wouldn't even say that. Let's back up a bit and give some context for this novel. The Lay of the Land is the last book of a trilogy about the life of Frank Bascom. In the first book, the sports writer, Frank's life is a shambles. A son has died. His marriage and his career as a novelist have failed. Then a decade later, in Independence Day, which I should note won the Pulitzer Prize, Frank becomes a real estate agent, and he's still got marriage and family and children problems. So now, in The Lay of the Land, Frank is older, as we all are, and is still selling real estate. How has he changed?
Well, I think he's funnier, at least the stuff that I had to put in the book incited in me humor because some of it is dark. He has cancer. His former wife has decided she's in love with him again, which is horrifying to him. His kids have grown up to be not what he would have expected, which probably happens to everyone who has kids. And his wife has abandoned him. And so all of these things are swirling around him, just as you say, at the beginning of this, at the beginning of the Thanksgiving season, which is always full of morbidities anyway, as far as I'm concerned.
And putting stresses on certain fissures in the natural family scheme.
Exactly. Which the book uses as challenges for him to reconcile and accommodate. I mean, that's when I started off writing these books, my wife said to me, she said, why don't you write a book about somebody who's happy? You had never done that before. And so my way of understanding how you write about somebody who's happy is you encounter someone who's just like the rest of us, but who may be trying harder to make himself happy and not complaining about life. And in fact, trying hard to make the cards that he's dealt playable cards.
The book, The Lay of the Land, is set in 2000. As you were doing it, was it a big choice that you had to make of whether to put it before or after September 11th?
Yes.
Yeah?
It was a big choice. And I made the choice for two or three, I think, quite sound reasons. One was I didn't think I had the capacity to write a novel which was set in the aftermath of 2001. It just wasn't in my range.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But you're one of the great American novelists, Richard.
Well, then I make great American decisions then, if that's the case. And this was one of them. I mean, for me, events have to, even if they aren't cataclysmic events like 9/11, events all around me have to settle into the ground around me and then sort of percolate back up through my feet. I'm always surprised when I think of something that I want to write about because almost inevitably it's something that I've known about for years.
Well, there's a scene about a cat getting run over in this book, which apparently has been in your head for many, many years.
That's exactly right. Once my mother in the front yard of our house in Jackson, Mississippi, in what must have been about 1950, ran over my cat. And she didn't know she ran over the cat and just backed out into the street and drove away. And I was left alone, 6 years old, at the house with this cat sort of in his death throes. And I picked the little cat up and I ran next door where there was this old Civil War veteran. You can imagine that. I know.
Yeah.
Sitting on the front porch.
A very old man.
A very, very, very old turkey neck guy. And I ran up to him and I said, my cat's been run over. And he was, of course, addle-pated as could be. And he said to me, he said, I think you've got a Persian there. He said, but it looks like something's wrong with it. I've known that story all my life. Suddenly, a moment comes in the middle of this book that it seemed to fit in perfectly, and there it was.
That's interesting. That you have this sort of pantry of memories, and at the right moment, you'll go and get that thing from the pantry.
You could also say that the pantry was getting bare, so I was looking back behind the first row of cans now.
Having written this trilogy about Frank Bascom, do you feel as though that pantry is bare? You cleaned it out. You're happy to go on? Or are you going to miss having this armature for your imagination?
I don't think I'll miss it. I would really rather that things went on apace in another direction now. Yeah, I try to bring the whole institution of being a writer back down to zero after a book is done. Not way below the point of even thinking that I am even going to write another book. And little by little, these things kind of come back into my head, and I think, well, gee, maybe I could write a book about that. But it's from the premise that I don't really ever have to write another book.
Is there a part of Frank Bascom that you most closely relate to?
Frank's notion in The Sports Writer that you can kind of go down on the ladder of cachet from being a writer to becoming a sports writer and ultimately becoming a real estate agent is, for me, something I strongly believe in. I think a lot of people would be happier if they quit aspiring and ascending at a certain point in their life and settled on something that they did that simply made them happy.
You grew up in Mississippi and Arkansas, and
yes.
And I think you still spend some time in New Orleans.
Yes.
But you have mostly, since your early work, left the South alone.
That's right.
How come?
Because other people do it better than I could.
You mean Faulkner or people now?
I mean Faulkner. I mean Eudora Welty. I mean Barry Hanna. I mean Buddy Norton. It's their natural subject. And when I was 30 years ago thinking about writing the first book I wrote, which was set in the South, I was thinking that I could write a book which would break the mold, which would be set in the South but wouldn't be thought of as a Southern novel. And the first thing anybody ever said and the last thing anybody ever said about it was another Southern novel. I really want to write books that will break some kind of mold, and I thought there's just no need for me to do this work.
I read that your grandparents owned this big hotel in Little Rock.
That's right.
That seems to me it must be, speaking of pantries of material, waiting for you to make a novel out of it.
It was a great way to grow up because it was sort of the Andy Eloise experience, really. It was a big old blousy drummer's hotel that also housed the state legislature when the legislature was in session in Arkansas. And all the governors, everybody came there all the time. And my first job was as a room service waiter. What more can I tell you? I mean, you get to see at the age of about 16 what adults do when they don't want to be seen doing it. And I saw a lot of that. You know, knock, 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 the door opens, here I am, and there they are. You see some interesting tableaus.
And has that become or will it become fiction?
No, I've written some essays about it. But I don't think, because it would be set in Arkansas, I still have the same little embargo in my heart against writing about the South.
So Arkansas counts, I guess.
Arkansas does count, I suppose. But apropos of you saying this, Kurt, I am going to write a little novel, which is set in Saskatchewan, about a man who runs a hotel out on the plains there. So maybe some little flecks of that experience of younger life could find their way into another book.
Did you, as a room service waiter or before or after, did you read a lot?
No, I was dyslexic, and I read hardly at all. I had to learn seriously to read in my late 20s. You know, I learned to read along with the other second graders, but I was slow to learn to read. Went all the way through school not really reading more than the minimum. But I wasn't so badly dyslexic that I was disabled from reading. I just had to do it really slowly. And as I did, lingering on those sentences as I had to linger, I fell heir to language's other qualities, which I think has helped me write sentences.
You're saying the dyslexia made you slow down and actually have to go through the warp and woof of the language?
Exactly that, yeah.
You've been married for many, many years, longer than
years.
Any of us. Your wife, Christina, is, if not a collaborator, at least helps you out.
She helps me immeasurably, particularly and most specifically and recently, she helped me finish this book. She let me read it to her aloud.
As you're going or all at once?
All at once. We started last January and steady on, read it straight through, she with the manuscript, me with the manuscript, sitting across the room from each other in our apartment in New Orleans, right to the end. It's quite a gesture of affection.
But that's not just, here, let me perform for you, dear. It's an editing process?
Absolutely, because she's got a manuscript. And she'll say, read that again. Is that the word you want to use? She always helped me, though. We've read all these books aloud. Moreover, at the beginning of life, when I was just starting out as a writer, she said to me, look, I'll work. You stay at home and write. It's worth it for you to do this. And there's almost no greater gift you could give to a writer than the time to do his work.
I'm glad it's all worked out, both with the career and the marriage.
Well, I never think of writing as being a career, and I never think of my life with Christina as being a marriage. I don't have those sort of brackets, so it all kind of seems to fall under one rubric. I only do two things.
And this next novel about Canada, will it be a Richard Ford-ish book, or is this going to be a departure?
Well, I don't know, Kurt. I guess I think it's going to be a Richard Ford-ish book. I'm kind of left with that at this end of the stick, you know?
Thank you very much, Richard Ford.
Great to talk to you.
Richard Ford's new novel is The Lay of the Land, and it is in bookstores everywhere in America now. Coming up, does life imitate the movies?
If you're a Southern girl in my generation and you grew up with Scarlett O'Hara being so deeply ingrained in your psyche, you were Scarlett O'Hara.
Gone with the Wind and its hold on the American imagination. That's next up in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.